just like you can have somebody kick down your door or scurry up your street late at night and steal your Volkswagen, you can also find yourself with some physical or intellectual or relational capital, and things can happen where you wake up one day and go, it's gone.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
We like to recommend to people good money saving and money making tips and tricks. And I always love credit cards for using for this way. By the way, I know people are sitting on pins and needles wanting to know, yes, I have spent enough money on my Delta card that I'm now gold for next year, so I can wait in their endless lines in Atlanta. That means that the Delta card gets put away and out comes the Bonvoy card, and now I'm getting hotel points for the rest of the year. My announcement is that I have talked about the Fold card before. So Fold is an app, and it's also it's a debit card. And you can get a credit card. You can also use it as a debit card. And what it does is every time you buy anything with it, like you load it up with $100, then go buy a Coca-Cola with it. If you like sugary acid to pour down your throat, you go buy a Coca-Cola with it. And then for that $4, you get a percentage of, as he guzzles this Dr. Pepper. That's Waco's own, what you're drinking there.
That's right.
For every dollar that you spend on the Fold card, they build up for you. They start stacking sats for you. They start stacking Bitcoin money just by you using it. And then once it builds up to a certain amount, then you can press a button and it'll go sling a hunk of your sats into your storage, whatever that is. So I like the Fold card. That was a long intro to say that they have introduced a new component to the Fold card, which is they can now do every ACH deposit that you'll ever do, including your rent or your mortgage, and you'll get 1.5% of that money that goes out to pay your mortgage. You'll just get some free sats for it, some Bitcoin value just by using a thing. So that's a pretty sweet deal, and it works just like a checking account. There's a routing number and an account number, and your mortgage people will never know the difference. They just know they got paid.
Wow.
So that's kind of sweet. They just rolled that out, and I was, not only did I jump on that, you know what I'll do to see if anybody wants to do this? I will put in the show notes my personal Fold card Reco. And if you use my little Reco code, you'll get some free sats for using it. And the kid will also get some free sats for you using his Reco. So I'll put that in the show notes.
Great.
Something you want to say, Mark? How are you doing? How's that mustache doing for you?
It's good. I think that it's full. It's really come into its own. I realize there's some of you that probably would say you're neither Burt Reynolds nor Tom Selleck, so get out of here with that mustache. But
no.
Mrs. Parrot enjoys it, so you can just take a hike.
No. If that's how you feel about Mark's mustache, you haven't spent time with any 35-year-olds lately, because that's what they all got going on.
Oh,
and there's a whole heck of a lot more of them that are worse than that one.
Okay. Well, I think we should jump straight into it, because I've got some what we here at The Wallet call hot sports opinions to offer today, and it's going to take every moment of our time to get through them all. So let's go.
Great. So we're doing a series right now on protecting what it is that you've got. So we spend a whole lot. We've spent years talking to people about being shrewd with your dollars, honoring God with the way that you lead your home. And let's say you had some success. Let's say that you've got a little pile of money. Let's say you've got some stuff together. How do you protect your stuff? Do you spend any efforts at protecting it, or do you just worry about what comes in the door? This is, by the way, one of the great downfalls of the mega church movement, only worrying about who comes in the front door. Meanwhile, people are streaming out the back door, and they kind of shrug their shoulders and go, we just need more new people So we don't want to be that way with our resources, our assets. We want to take care of that which we've been entrusted with. That's like responsibility, yes?
And not just our stuff, but our other capitals as well. So just like you can have somebody kick down your door or scurry up your street late at night and steal your Volkswagen, you can also find yourself with some physical or intellectual or relational capital, and things can happen where you wake up one day and go, it's gone, and we don't want that for you.
That's right. So we have covered protecting your financial capital, both the money that you have and the money that you're going to have in previous episodes. And now we would like to move up the five capitals ladder, up from financial. We're going to go up a level, and we're going to talk about your intellectual capital. How do you protect the intellectual capital that you have? I'm just gonna throw out some ideas, and we're gonna bandy them about and see how it goes. Okay,
great.
One thing that comes to mind as a creative myself, as somebody who comes up with ideas and then tries to generate action from those ideas, is that I think people need to think about IP. When I think about protecting your intellectual capital. So for instance, if you're a graphic designer, then the things that you do that are for the big company that you work for, great. Obviously the company owns that stuff, but there are probably noodles and doodles that you do in your free time. That's an interesting question. Free time, is it at your office desk? Could it be on the clock? Could you be on the clock but outside the building? And you have an idea for a thing, probably if you're walking down this space like packaged goods, your brain thinks a certain way. And you have an idea, that's kind of an idea. You jot it down, you're thinking it's not for my brand, it's not for the company that I'm working for, it's just an idea that I have. Well, it's something to consider that you put things in place to protect or copyright IP. Or if you've never done this, for goodness sake, please look at your contract that you have with your company and understand what of your time goes to them. So I know that, for instance, songwriting contracts can be anything that you think of. As long as you're under our employ, we have rights to. Well, that is pretty dramatic stuff. So that if you're in your bed at 11 p.m. at night and you have a thought that strikes you like a thunderbolt and you go jot it down, that doesn't belong to you. So anyways, that's something that comes to mind, is be aware of your IP, intellectual property, rights and rules, and protect those things. If you're a songwriter, copyright your work. If you're an author, copyright it, you know, take care of your ideas.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
When we started our financial planning company, first, we spent money, and I'm not here to, this title of this episode is not tooting our own horns. That's not what we're talking about today. But I think we hired
that probably would get some clicks.
Tooting our own horn. We hired a designer, and I think he smashed it out of the ballpark. I love the logos and the name and everything that is around Outpost Advisors, the financial planning company.
Yeah.
And I went and I found a lawyer and I said, go copyright, trademark, do whatever it is that will protect this name and this logo, etc. And it was early in my career as a business owner, and I went to a lawyer that was very affordable. That was not a great choice, because they came back and they went, not possible. Somebody else has already created an Outpost Advisors company and we can't trademark it. And so I went away sad, like the rich young ruler. But I met a guy, I don't know.
And he went away very sad, for he did truly love his logo.
Yeah. I met a guy a few months later who was also a trademark lawyer. And he said, well, let me take a swing at it. And I said, well, how much do you cost? He told me his hourly rate. It was astronomical. And I thought, well, this other lawyer was $175 an hour and you're like $700. That sounds crazy. And this other guy worked for like 6 hours and couldn't do it. So this is going to cost me $20,000. The short story is sometimes the really expensive lawyer, he came back and said, I spent 45 minutes on this. Here's all your trademarks. It's done. and it cost me a fraction of what it would have cost with the chump lawyer. And we protected our intellectual property. So if you're out there thinking about starting Outpost Advisors, we will nail you to the wall if you try to do that.
I like it. A challenge. Okay. So the bottom line to me is specifically when you have a side hustle that's in the same industry as your job, read the contracts, play by the rules, and don't give anything away. That's my two cents. Here's another thought from a creative type. We're talking about intellectual capital, and the currency of intellectual capital is ideas. So when you generate ideas, here's a pretty obvious thought. You might be a young person and think that you can juggle all of these in your head, but you can't. So you should journal. Pretty simple thing. Put your musings down somewhere. You don't know where they're going to lead to. And in my decades of trying to follow the Lord and learn about him, I just made it a habit back, gosh, in the 90s, I think of creating little Word documents and say, well, I'm learning about self-control, the topic of self-control. So as I would learn something, I would put all of that stuff somewhere. And then, well, I'm going to be learning about what strength means biblically. Well, I would start a new Word document, strength, and just populate these things. It was just a way for me to keep track of my ideas, the things that I thought God was revealing to me. Well, lo and behold, fast forward 25 years, and I was constantly, when I was in full-time ministry, constantly going back to these files, and somebody asked me a question about fasting. And I go, you know, I learned some really good stuff about fasting back in the day. Let me open that up for you. And there was this treasure trove of ideas because I had been a little militant about tracking them all. If your ideas are valuable, then harness them somewhere. Don't just let them fly away like so many butterflies, which you cannot capture. Pin them down. Do you have a relationship with ideas and journals?
Yeah, I use the plain old notes app in my iPhone when I
I do that too.
Comes along. I will say that we were sitting around the dinner table the other night, and for the listener who's interested in this kind of thing, there's another Half-Baked Ideas podcast coming from Abraham's Wallet. We've been kind of noodling on that, and this is a tragedy. This is not a joyful story I'm about to tell, but the perfect half-baked idea struck me at dinner, and I said it, and my whole family, like, food was spat from mouths. There was uproarious laughter.
Wow.
And my wife said, write it down right now. And I said, honey, this one's too good. We'll never forget it. And we went on with our dinner, and at the end of dinner, I went, I've lost it. And to this day,
oh my goodness,
I don't know what it is. And no, my children can't remember. We don't know what it
what?
Is. It has been lost because I didn't take a moment and write it down. So I agree. Write your ideas down.
It was like a miracle that came in, like an angelic visitation.
It
lit upon you like a bright light from the cosmos. And then it was gone. And everyone doubted whether it actually happened or not.
Perhaps the Lord did this for this moment just right now so that it would be a lesson to our listeners to write your ideas down.
What a lesson of your hubris that you thought you would remember it.
Okay. So you're kind of giving us creative person intellectual capital ideas.
Yes.
I like it.
So I'm talking about, again, how do you preserve, how do you not lose the capital that you have, your ideas? And I'm going to get to the one that you most want to say, but I'll just throw this one other thing in. One of the things that you have going for you is just the fact that your brain works really good. So the fact that you can make connections, I don't know when the last time you learned a new board game was, But when somebody presents a new board game to you, you know, your brain kind of on its own goes through a filing cabinet of every game you've ever played and goes, oh, this is like this one in this way, but it's like this other one in this way. And your brain does these great things. Your brain's acuity, its ability to make those connections and come up with new blossoming ideas, that's very precious to you in your life, that your brain can do that. And guess what? As you age, your brain will on its own, this sad thing called entropy will set in, and you will start to lose the ability to make all those quick connections. It's the reason that older people have to think when there's someone's name, I can't remember, or what's the word for when you give power or responsibility to another person so you don't have to do it? Oh yeah, delegating, you know, et cetera. Your vocabulary starts to wither. Your short-term memory starts to wither. So we got to keep those things going. Competition is really good for your brain. Competition is good for you. So games, strategy, quickness, reading your opponent, you know, poker. That's, you know, my dad kept poker going until this end of his days. He was out there playing golf. He'd look at a hole, think of his strategy. How do I want to approach this hole? Wow, my stupid hip is doing this. I can overcome that by moving my elbow this way. All of that kind of thinking where you're solving a problem, you're working against your opponent, that is all good for your brain. So I throw that out to people. Be involved in games and competition. I can see you're itching to say something.
No, I love it. I was going to say poker and you said it. But doesn't have to be poker just because I'm into cards. It could be chess. It could be...
Yes.
Last night we were playing Ticket to Ride, which I contend there's playing Ticket to Ride with five-year-olds where you can all just kind of learn how to make your trains.
Yeah.
And then there's 3D chess Ticket to Ride where you're playing against game players and you're blocking routes and you're trying to figure out based on the information you have, what are they doing and how do I stop it? And defensive Ticket to Ride. So anyways,
yes.
That's what we did at our family, at our house last night, is we played some board games because we were going to watch some pre-Olympic events. And unfortunately, one of the children concussed themselves. So no screens was part of the prescription.
Sorry to hear that.
I just endorse what you're saying. Games are very good for the brain. I've talked about it before. My wife's father went through dementia, and so we've always kind of stayed up on the news when it comes to preserving the mind. And anything, is there anything you can do to stave off the inevitable decline of the mind, but especially as it relates to actual disease like dementia and some of the degeneration diseases that happen in the brain? And one of the things they say is that playing games, strategy games, and kind of engaging your mind in that way actually can reduce your chances of developing certain dementias.
That's right. Okay, now, the best way, ready for this? There's a drum roll in the background. The best way to keep your mind sharp and not lose your acuity, that is your vocabulary, your short-term memory, your fluency, is to read. People, reading. Not reading in a scrolling 5 seconds of reading to see if I get an endorphin hit. No, no. Long-term reading. I'm following a story. I'm following a plot line. I'm following a line of thought. And I'm sitting for 20 minutes. 40 minutes, 60 minutes at a time. 30 minutes of reading versus 30 minutes of watching videos is a night and day difference mentally. Just to lay it out for you real quick, it's like everything is spoon-fed to you and it's presented as applesauce to you if you're watching a movie. If you're reading, you're being handed a T-bone steak and your brain has to do the work of creating emotion and a soundtrack and creating the visuals that are all happening in your head. I don't know if you do this, but I like actively when I'm reading something. I was reading this morning. I remember this morning, I'm reading in 2 Samuel. I'm reading this story about David. I find it confusing. So I can hold on a second. I went back and took the time to, let me lay out what is being said here. I've got to see it in my mind. Okay, there's this guy. This guy's Joab. Okay, there is this other guy standing around here. All right, and the arrow is shot. Where does this arrow go? And I'm watching it, and it helps me understand it because I'm playing it out. That's a lot more mental work than just press play, sit there, and passively let it wash over you. It's a night and day difference mentally. To read is to exercise your brain muscle.
I got an email from Jonathan. I'm assuming you're listening, Jonathan. And in our hobbies episode, he said, "Hey, man, one of my hobbies is reading. My wife and I both, we like reading." And it seems, I don't know, we probably talked a lot about how hobbies often engage like physical capital and relational, where you're doing it in groups.
Yes.
And I think he was concerned, is this reading hobby that I have not acceptable based on your model? Is it an exception to the model? And I said, Jonathan, you know, first of all, I was answering his email. Wednesday was a holiday here in Utah. It was Pioneer Day, where everybody has the day off. So I was poolside when I got this email, and I was reading a novel. And so I said, buddy, not only am I not anti-reading, I'm doing it right now. And I think the reason that it didn't come to the top of my hobbies list when we were talking through hobbies is because I almost think of it as required for somebody right. who is going to be not just preserving intellectual capital, but an interesting human being. And you and I were talking about this yesterday. I said, Steve, I don't think 15% of guys regularly engage in thoughtful reading. And I'm not anti the books that are like, become your best self, like learn sales techniques, or even be a good Christian. Those books can be helpful. Like no shade.
Yeah.
Personally, I like my diet of reading to be mostly things that were written at least 50 years ago. And if I can find things that were written more than 100 years ago and they're still out there in circulation, like people are still saying this is good, I'm not a very fast reader. So those are almost always rich and chewy and full of goodness. So for me, it was like, I went through a period of insomnia a few years ago, and that's when I finally started picking books up. And then, praise God, I can sleep fine now. But I've kept the reading habit, and I really like fiction. I will always be reading through some fiction. And kind of like our little summer movies thing that we talked about a few weeks back for the kids, I just think processing stories... you just talked about it in the Word. Most of the Bible is stories that we are supposed to read and learn from.
Yes.
I'm not saying that it's the same to read John Steinbeck and we get the same level of inspired Word of God.
Steinbeck.
But we can get a lot of really interesting, thoughtful stuff to chew on by reading fiction or nonfiction. If that's your thing, that's fine. I'm not here to say you have to read novels, but I'm guessing that 85% of you listening to this, fellas, are not regularly picking up good, chewy, thoughtful books and working through them. And I just want to challenge you, like, do it. This is critical to you developing and continuing to develop intellectually. I mean, I don't care that you earned a bachelor's degree 16 years ago. Honestly, it really doesn't matter now. And you could have earned your professional designations. I worked really hard on some of those. It really doesn't matter. Your brain is still going to rot. And like the work you put in formal education for a lot of us that are way past those years, it's not like you just get to coast out the rest of your days on that work. You need to be continuing to develop. And reading's not the only way to do it. I mean, you can learn just about anything on YouTube now. However, reading is probably, like you said, one of the healthiest mechanisms for us to continue developing our minds over the long run.
I try to read to learn, that is, expand my mind with ideas for like 90% of my reading. I know this isn't the case with you, and that's totally fine. But for me, I read for entertainment really only on vacation as a rule. So one thing that I've done is that I want to be through with my entertainment reading at the end of vacation. So I have just started the latest John Grisham. I always enjoy the legal thriller. And I think I can finish it at the end of vacation. So I'm doing that right now for funsies. I'm into this very interesting little book called Thank God for Bitcoin, which is it's like the surprising relationship between the Bible and Bitcoin, just something I'm learning about. And I'm reading with the girls right now. Very funny thing that this just happened. I'll just throw this in real quick. I'm still reading to my children who are 12 and 14. And they friggin' love it, by the way. So there's no rule against when you have to stop that at 6 years old. We're reading through The Once and Future King, 1958's Once Great and Future book. King, which is about the development of a king. And it just so happens that in my Bible reading, I was just in Deuteronomy 17, which is about the development of a king and what's needed for a king. Really interesting. As I've already said, I love making those connections. I love synthesis. That's like one of my favorite things in all of life is synthesizing two ideas or two sources together. Anyways, so I just throw that out. There's different kinds of reading for different purposes. And it's kind of like just kind of what we said about hobbies. There's like really healthy hobbies. And then there's like icing hobbies. And you might really be into the Mario franchise. Okay. Let's make that a small portion of what you got going in your life, right?
Can I, are we ready to kind of transition over to physical capital? Because I have kind of a bridge thought here, which is, I think on both, really on all five capitals, but it's really evident to me on these two, one of the biggest places I want people to watch out when they're thinking about protecting these capitals. So it's not necessarily about going out and getting more, it's protecting, is who you're listening to really, really matters. So, you know, who are your financial gurus? We've talked about if you pop open TikTok and just search life insurance, you'll find a bunch of absolutely horrifically bad advice from people who are trying to sell life insurance of different types. Mm-hmm. Who you're listening to really matters. When it comes to intellectual, there's people who are good talkers. You guys who are listening to this right now should put us through this filter too. We live in the era where the media, we've pretty definitively shown that on no side can you just go, well, it's in the news, so I assume it's true. No, that's almost the opposite. So just be really thoughtful about who you listen to and come up with, I think it's different in each capital, but you need a framework by which to judge the people who are going to try to hand you something in any of the particular five capitals.
One of the great rules about five capitals is that you always want to trade up when you can. So for instance, the money that you would spend to buy a book to get that brain of yours going, it's worth the $20. Buy the book. That's good. Similarly, I went to a conference this past week, had to put some drive time in, had to spend some money to make this thing happen. And I can say my mind, the wheels were turning a lot. When I get into a conference situation, my brain turns in three different ways, and it's tiring. It's mentally tiring, and it's also kind of exhilarating. I really like it, and it's worth the money. So if you need to put yourself into mentally challenging positions, I think most people are like you described, Mark. It's like, look, I learned how to be an accountant 15 years ago. Aren't we done? And you should stay learning. That should be a move for you. So go to a conference that's about your marriage. Just go to a place where you're learning and you can get that stuff going and it's worth the money. Okay. Same thing about physical capital. So I'll just say this about physical capital. It's worth spending money on to build and to maintain. Again, we're talking about how do I not lose what I've got? And if you're most Americans, you need to lose some stuff, not your physical capital. You'll build capital by losing weight. You need to prioritize your physical capital. I think we undervalue physical capital and we think, well, if I'm thinking good and I produce at work, and the money's solid and my relationships are fine, I think I'm okay. And it's, you are not at your best if you are not physically cared for. You're not setting yourself up for long-term output if you're not taking care of your body. And also, you're really given a bad model. You're teaching and training your children poorly if physical capital isn't part of your life. So I'm going to say some really obvious things and let you riff. I mean, this is my perspective from where I'm sitting right now. You better keep it going or it will disappear. My dad always used to say, I would talk to him about, you know, playing tennis when he's hurting and going like, you know, Dad, you could take a week off because you talking about being sore or your knee hurts or whatever. And he would just always say, you will use it or you will lose it, because he was surrounded by old timers that were his age that couldn't move around anymore. And he thought, I'm not doing that. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to play through pain. I'm going to keep going. So you've got to keep it going. We all start losing muscle mass. I looked this up, so I wouldn't be lying. We start losing naturally starting at age 35. 35, we're losing muscle mass. So if you're not intentionally maintaining, you will get physically weaker and weaker and weaker, which sucks. So we've got to prioritize physical capital. And I'll just throw this in. I have heard the challenge before that intellectual capital or spiritual capital is so important that physical capital doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And you know, the one thing I've heard on that is, what do you think Stephen Hawking would have said if you'd said, could we take some of your brilliant ideas away from you and give you a body that works? What would he have said? I think he would have said, I'll take the body that works because it opens up an entire world to me. Also, you can't get back lost years. If you like have a bad smoking habit and you know that's taking years off your life, you're dealing with obesity, you know that's taking years off your life. Deal with those things now. It's part of caring for your generations to watch after your physical capital.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because my Bible reading, part of it this morning, was 1 Corinthians 9, in which Paul specifically mentions physical endurance and training and racing as an example. Everyone competes, but not everyone wins the prize. And they're just competing in order to get a wreath that's going to wither and fade. You're competing for something eternal. So I always heard that verse and thought, back in the kind of early days when I was hearing that stuff, thought, well, Paul's really just saying, like, don't worry about the stupid racing, physical training, focus on the training that matters. What he's actually saying and what we see elsewhere is that physical training is of some value. And we're not saying that if you have to choose between spending time with the Lord and going for a run, like, make sure you stay jacked first. What we're saying is there is real value to physical training. And there is, like all capitals, something you can learn about the other capitals by, you know, going deep in this one. So I think for me, with physical capital, I think a lot about endurance and just discomfort, that's something that is so valuable across the board. Even if we go down into, of course, if we go up to spiritual capital, I'm reading some old Puritans right now and stuff they wrote, and they were very interested in putting the flesh to death and going through spiritual discomfort in order to grow. But also financially, if we go all the way to the bottom of the list, you have to have endurance to win the game of money. And, you know, I think most people think that financial endurance means I'm really good at saving and budgeting and not spending. I'm not going to buy a latte. I'm going to be really, like, committed to the cause. But it also means, I think, when it comes to financial endurance, means making hard decisions that aren't what your flesh wants later in life. So let's say you've done a great job with money. You've built up $1 million just sitting there in a taxable account. You can use it on anything you want. And you've already paid for your retirement. That's when I see a lot of 60-year-olds start to look around and go, I'm actually going to go buy a $140,000 vehicle right now. I'm going to take a huge, ridiculously expensive vacation. And those multi-generational things I talked about when I was 45, I mean, they are nice ideas, but I really could just enjoy this. I've got my retirement taken care of. Why not? Why, I deserve it. And it's like the endurance thing is not just for one little slice of life. And I don't personally think there's better ways to sink that into our souls, that endurance thing, than physical capital. Like, I see it in my kids. They do not want to get out of bed in the morning when it's summertime. And there's some, we have to train intentionally, like pressing into discomfort. My daughter, she really loves playing soccer. And I noticed she gets tired out there on the soccer field pretty quick. And so I said, you know, she would probably benefit from cross country. They offer that at her school. She did not want to do cross country. And I said, fair enough. You're doing a lot of soccer. If you don't want to do cross country, I want to see you run 2 miles in less than 20 minutes. And then if you can do that before school starts, then you don't have to do cross country. You can keep just doing soccer. And so she was out there. We started out, I think we were at 31 minutes for 2 miles. You know, she's a fifth grader. She's going into fifth grade. So she's not a very old kid. And I understand that, right? I was the kid who was failing the president's fitness standards back when they still had those, in sixth grade, getting lapped on the mile by all the other kids in my sixth grade class. But, we persevered. There was twice in the summer, that I was stopped with her, where I was out trying to help with a training run, and I was stopped and asked, sir, I'm sorry, we need to ask, is this your daughter? Because I have a crying girl who looks like maybe she's being abducted, and really I'm just trying to help her run her 2 miles. But there was intense physical discomfort, and the joy that she experienced, we were right on the door, 20 minutes and 30 seconds, 20 minutes and 29 seconds. And I'm like, you got to get there. She's like, but I'm basically there. Does that count? No. One day something clicked in the brain and we went from 20 minutes and 29 seconds to 18 minutes flat, just boom. And it was like, see what you're capable of. And it did all sorts of good things for her. I, as a father, did not press into that, because I really wanted her to be a good runner. I don't care if she's a good runner. I don't care if she's good at soccer. Like, none of that really matters to me. I want her to have fun with the things she does. But I really care that she learns to push through things that hurt and are physically uncomfortable, so that, especially so that in the future, she can push through, like, oh man, I am hitting a really hard part of marriage and I'm going to just continue because I have built up this endurance thing. And I think physical capital is an excellent way to kind of bolster that ability across all of the capitals.
Of course it is. That's why Paul said what he said about physical training has some value. Just to pile on your point about discomfort, it's so important. That it means growth. I thought you were going to quote your good friend Jocko.
I like Jocko.
And what's your favorite Jocko quote?
Oh man, he talks about, is it raining outside and 31 degrees and you have to go for a 12-mile run? Good.
Yeah.
You know.
That's right. So when he says, is it hard? Good. What he's referring to is the nutritious quality of discomfort, as you say. And one way I have to bring up in physical capital is regarding the food thing. Now, people might know this. They might not. I think some people think that if you're going to get in shape and get your body in line, the number one thing you can do is start pumping iron or start increasing those steps. And those are good things. Those are definitely good things. But I am told that an 85% difference about what is happening with your weight is due to what you eat, what comes in the machine. Of course, we want the machine to process stuff quicker and better. That's one of the benefits of being fit and having muscle mass, et cetera. But we've got to learn the value of having some discomfort in what we eat. That's why people need to have apps on their phone. I like the Lose It app because it just tracks what you're eating, so that there's no funny business and going, I don't think I did too bad today. Let's just see it. Let's just track it. It's sort of like creating a budget in your home and seeing, now what exactly is going on? What kind of money do we have to work with? I was a really good boy because I went south for this conference. I went to Nashville, and guess what they have in Nashville that they don't have in Cincinnati? Can you think of anything?
I mean, hot chicken sandwiches.
Well, we have some of those in Cincinnati. It's a creamy thing.
Bluebell?
They have Bluebell ice cream in Nashville. And I saw it. It was right there in front of me. And I said no. I said no to the Bluebell. And I felt like I really wanted someone nearby that I could brag to that would give me some attaboys for the way that I treated.
We're all here this week to give you your attaboys just a couple days late.
And I stopped into Bucky's on this drive. And guess what Bucky's has? Every Bucky's has Bluebell ice cream. Now, Okay. I will do some eating with my eyes. I'll consider the delicious flavors that are sitting there. That's a pretty good flavor. Didn't eat it. Anyhow, you got to say no. You've got to decide what you're going to eat. And you should be wise about that stuff. And if you didn't know this already, simply saying yes to what's offered to you as American will kill you. Very simple statement.
There's lots of grifters in this space of physical capital.
True.
People want to tell you that there's an option to have what you want in the physical capital space without actually doing the hard work of saying no to the foods that you wish you could eat, or of exercise to build strength and things like that. And when it comes to weight loss specifically, it's a very simple formula. And anybody who will tell you that it's not, that no, it's actually just your hormones, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. Now, some of that stuff is worth making sure that you're straightened out and having a physician that cares for you, things like that. But at the end of the day, the reason Ozempic has changed the world of weight loss for people is not because it does some magical hormone adjustment. It's because it slows your digestive system down so you can't physically eat more than... I was talking to somebody this week who's doing Ozempic. They've lost 50 pounds on this drug. And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, when I've tracked, and I've wanted to lose weight, I go down to like 1700 calories a day. And they're like, no. I can't physically get myself to eat more than 400 to 700 calories a day on this medicine.
Oh my word.
The stomach stays full. The digestive tract stays full. So it's physically uncomfortable. And that's kind of gross, to know that people are walking around literally full of digesting food. But and there, like all medicine, there's probably a case where it's really helpful and people should talk to their doctors if they're thinking that's the answer.
Our friend Tim Schmoyer is very into the value of your breathing lately.
Oh,
so he's convinced me that what you need to do is you need to tape KT tape and put it over your mouth when you go to sleep so that you will not do any mouth breathing when you sleep. You ever heard of those?
I've heard people say this, and to this, I kind of echo your father's thought, which is like, if that's how you live an extra year, I will be checking out a year earlier because I'm not interested in taping my mouth shut while I sleep. I don't care.
Well, it does bring me to a point that I wanted to make about physical capital, which is that you cannot ignore sleep. And to me, this kind of seems like no duh, but I know statistically our people, the people listening, are not getting sleep. And man, being under-rested and underslept is bad for you in so many ways. It's one of these physical things that will affect up and down the ladder of capitals. I know for a fact, I learned this back in college during communication days, that tired people don't communicate well. We're much more self-interested. Your world just gets smaller when you're tired, as opposed to being expansive, being generous, being considerate. It's just a physiological reality. You make worse food decisions. You don't have the energy that you need to move around. Sleep is supposed to be a restorative thing. It's one of the reasons that the Lord commands it for us to be rested. And you're not doing anybody any favors by cutting the edges off your sleep, whether it is going to sleep too late or getting up really early because you think you're going to get some extra work done and get some emails done before the office opens, et cetera. It's not wise, and it's going to hurt your physical capital long term. So, you know, pretty simple categories here. And I know we're not experts on the subject, but we've got to throw it out there when we talk about protecting your capital. The food that you intake, the amount of exercise your body moving, and the amount of sleep that you have. These are the big buckets of taking care of physical capital. Do you have anything to say about sleep?
I think that, like I said earlier, this is a place where I struggled a lot for a little while. And so there's definitely, we could do a whole episode someday on like sleep hygiene. I think that the quick stuff is most people's phone lives right next to their beds, and you right. might be tempted to scroll through it. Steve, I know when you're having a harder time with sleep, because I'll see a tweet pop up and it's like 10 o'clock my time, which means it's midnight your time. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not a good thing for him.
Fact.
But, you know, don't look at your phone before you go to sleep. It's really helpful if you get rid of alcohol, especially before bed. That kind of jacks your sleep up completely. Even the way you eat can affect your sleep. So if this is an area of struggle for you, this is a place where I would just kind of dig in. And there's a lot of interesting stuff on the internet that you can try. And if it works for you, great. I think just by putting some focus on sleep, you'll probably end up in a better spot than if you just go, I guess I get what I get and feel happy about it.
Yeah, the rule of thumb for both of those things, I'll just throw out. And if I was talking to a friend, I'd throw this out. That 2 hours before you think you're going to be going to sleep, you shouldn't be looking at a blue screen 2 hours before. Also, you shouldn't be eating 2 hours before. You'll just sleep better. And I have complained to my wife before, if I was trying to be a good boy after dinner and dinner was like at 6 and now it's 10:30 and I'm legitimately hungry in the bed, and I'm turning to my wife and go like, I know that it's too late and I can't go back, but I should have eaten later. Should have gotten an 8 o'clock snack or something. And she's like, yeah, tough luck, pal. I don't have any great rules to give anybody on you must exercise this much, et cetera. But exercise just has to be a part of your life. And the only other thing I would say about these two capitals that we're covering today is that you want intellectual and physical capital to be part of the rhythms of your family. So you want to be encouraging reading. So for instance, when I'm looking at my strategic vacation thing, one thing I'm checking in on is what books is everybody taking with us to the beach? I want to know that everybody's got a book that they're interested in. We're going to be talking about that on the drive home. We'll be talking about our books, if not doing it all during the week as well. And we are creating a diet during that week of exercise. And so one thing that we love going to the family beach place is because we know there's going to be tennis there. There's a little workout place that my wife loves. We know that the girls are going to be biking. We play golf together one time during that week. And we just like these cycles of getting things moving. So these things should be part of the culture of your family as well. So I throw that out to you dudes, saying we're not just talking about you. We're talking about the culture of your home, building and maintaining this capital, which is so precious, and protecting it, that it doesn't slip away like sands through the hourglass.
If you're totally lost in this physical capital thing, you're like, I have high blood pressure. I'm 20 pounds overweight. I have no idea how to exercise. I got all these issues. It would be wise of you to seek out some mentorship in this area. And I will just reiterate, you need to be very careful about who you listen to. So I used to think, I think most people used to say, well, if you have a medical problem, you can go to a medical doctor and whatever they tell you is probably going to be helpful. We learned, unfortunately, in kind of the last few years that that's not always the case. However, there's still a lot of absolute charlatans out there that have a placard hung out that says they're some sort of healthcare professional and they are not going to be helpful to you and they could very well be harmful to you. That has happened to me, even in things like just a sports injury. And I thought, well, I'll go to this chiropractor. And I ended up significantly injured because I didn't really investigate. Now, is there something to this or is it all absolutely junk science?
Yeah.
So be thoughtful about that. I mean, I think about my wife often, you know, she'll go into a very complicated delivery and there will be in the room a birth doula. And she's like, great, happy to have you here. Like, be a part of this, be helpful to this moment. But once in a while, the birth doula goes, now, I need you to stand down because I've been a part of over 100 deliveries. My wife...
We're getting a little OBGYN moment here.
She's been very trained to not try to big time someone in that moment, but she kind of chuckles to herself and goes,
over 100.
That's like a really busy week when I was a resident, and I've done more than, I think, 7,000 in my life now. I think that there is value to expertise. There's also, like, everybody has agency, so they should go out and kind of figure out who they're going to listen to and have on their team. I think I was listening to a podcast this morning when I woke up about a guy who was a big CrossFitter. And he's like, I was like an evangelist for CrossFit. And then I realized a lot of the things I'm telling people and evangelizing for CrossFit are just not true. And I've been saying, so I occasionally do a CrossFit workout, and this is not a knock on CrossFit. It's just to say that there's people out there that are motivated to push their thing. And it's helpful to be very thoughtful about who you let lead you in the physical space. And you can go grab your buddy who's like in awesome physical shape and say, could you help me? I would like to go that way. Or, you know, there's a mom in your community that's awesome at cooking healthy meals that actually taste good. It would be really smart to say, could I come and watch you prepare food?
So absolutely.
So that I could feed my family healthy meals. Cause right now when I try to do something healthy, it's disgusting and nobody wants to eat it. So we just revert to the unhealthy food.
Right.
Mentorship is great. Just be thoughtful about who you're grabbing.
Excellent. That's it on intellectual and physical, protecting that capital. We're not done with the series. We're going to be hitting relational capital and then finally spiritual capital. Until then, run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.